We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 143. Coming up later on this show, we talk to Yankees pitcher Chance Adams. He had a dominant performance on Wednesday morning, a weird morning game. We talked to him about 10-15 minutes later in the show, so stay tuned for that. We caught him on his, I guess, his night off. So he was definitely relaxed and enjoying the fact that he had a nice outing. But before that, Scott, what's up, man?
What's going on? I think we picked a good time to start recording on Wednesday night because it was right around the time when Tanaka gave up a three-run shot, all because Austin Romine put down the wrong pitch. It was purely on the catcher, obviously. So we were, that was our cue, I think, to let's get this show on the road, give Chance a call, and we'll start recording because obviously it's going badly again for Tanaka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess throwing meatballs in the middle of the plate to Baltimore Orioles sluggers at Camden Yards is a bad thing, and can't blame Gary Sanchez for that because he's on the bench.
Yeah, but what we could use right now, to tell you the truth, is that bat of Gary Sanchez to try to get us back into the game. That would be useful. That would be a useful tool at this point.
The 6-7-8-9 that Girardi rolled out today was 2013-esque, having Torres and Ref Snyder and Chase Headley and Austin Romine in there. It's a far cry from some of the other lineups the Yankees have been rolling out earlier this season. We're going to get into all of that. Before we get to that, though, please, guys, take a minute to rate and review the podcast in iTunes. It helps us out a tremendous amount. You guys don't know how much it helps us out and how much we enjoy it. Take a minute. Pause the show right now. Go give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. Also, light up the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. Who knows? Maybe you have something to say about Tanaka's performance. Maybe you guys have something to say about a whole personal catcher controversy. Whatever it is, call it up. 646-480-0342. Scott, what'd you think of my commercial infomercial voice right here?
Yeah, it was effective. Good job. I like how you kept the tone and went up and down. Let me tell you, let me go a little bit more specific just so people understand. I think we always say rate and review, it helps us out a lot. You don't realize how much it helps us. Well, let me be very specific and tell you how it helps us and helps you. The more ratings and reviews we get that are 5 stars, the higher we go on iTunes. The higher we go on iTunes, the better guests, the more guests we can get. So that definitely helps us secure guests with some of these teams, and it just gives us more of an ability to bring you guys better content. So please do that. If you are listening and you haven't reviewed, we really do appreciate it. We don't just say it. It really does help us out because it affects the show directly. It really does help the show quite a bit. And we want to bring you guys the best show we could possibly bring. So if you haven't, please do that. Andrew and I definitely appreciate it.
Well said. The first thing I want to talk about is Tanaka and the whole catcher situation. I know because it's what's hot on everyone's mind right now. And I got into some heated conversations on Twitter today because I tweeted something. I said, Tanaka is mentally weak for needing a personal catcher. And people jumped down my throat going back into time saying, well, Greg Maddux needed a personal catcher. Is he mentally weak? John Lester needed a personal catcher last year throughout the playoffs. Is he mentally weak? Listen, the guys can have personal catchers and they can still be good pitchers, but I don't think I'm out of line for saying that a pitcher is mentally weak for requiring a personal catcher.
It's such a, you know, first of all, when we're talking about the personal catcher scenario, I think you have to look at each individual situation in the context of that team, that situation, what's going on. There's not every time when there's a personal catcher, and usually when there's not one. I do know that there are circumstances where this is the case, where there is a high profile guy behind this personal catcher. But normally that's not the case. Normally there's not a high profile guy behind a personal catcher. When we're talking about this situation, first of all, I don't think it's on Tanaka. So I don't agree with you in the sense that Tanaka's mentally weak because of that. I think there may be other issues, but I don't think it's because of the personal catcher thing, because I personally don't think it's a Tanaka thing. I think this is, you know, whether it's coming from Girardi or Girardi's just experimenting, I don't know, but I don't think it's a Tanaka thing. That's just my intuition on that. The second thing is that when you have a guy like Gary Sanchez, it's a huge deal to take his bat out of the lineup every single time Tanaka's up. You don't know the situation when Tanaka's going to be in line to pitch to the opponent. We don't know what the situation is going to be within the season, within a series, whatever. You can't predict that. So if you're so set in your ways and you have to throw to one guy every single time, and then in a big situation that comes up and you have to take Gary Sanchez's bat out of the lineup, that's a problem that makes your team worse. And look back at the numbers. It's just, to me, it's such a non-issue because you look at the numbers from 2016 and they go completely opposite of what we're seeing outside of tonight, because obviously tonight was a different story. So I don't really understand the leg to stand on when people talking about the Tanaka personal catcher thing, unless they're just talking about personal catchers in general. I just don't see it relevant in this situation.
Well, it's a thing now because Girardi decided to trot out Austin Romine on Wednesday night. I was listening to the pregame on WFAN and Girardi said, well, we decided to throw Romine out there for a couple reasons. First of all, Gary Sanchez had caught 4 games in a row, and also they don't have any off days coming up. And a third reason is that Tanaka did well last time with Romine. So who knows? Maybe Tanaka, you're right. Maybe Tanaka did not request a personal catcher, but that doesn't change the fact that Girardi made it. It's a thing now. Now we're talking about it. This is now a storyline that is unnecessary.
But it's also one of those things where if you have a guy, you're the manager of a team, you have your number one pitcher who is struggling, has a good outing with a certain guy, not to say that that's a personal catcher, because again, that's one outing and it's only been a month and a half.
But it was a storyline even before that.
I understand the storyline, but I'm talking about it on the team side, okay? I'm not talking about the media side. I'm talking about the team side now. The team side, don't you want to keep him going in the good direction? And if the guy threw a good game to somebody, I mean, you could still throw him there, and then it's not a personal catcher scenario. It's just, it's back to back, and you're just trying to keep him going. And there's a coincidental day that it's a good time to get Sanchez off. I think people are making this too much of nothing. It's not a personal catcher scenario at this point. It's just not. It's only a few starts. if this is still occurring in July and August, then it's a personal catcher scenario. Yeah. I get it then. It's just, it's too soon to be even call anything like that. So
some people are calling it, not just people like us, people who are actually, I mean, there's talk about it who are people.
Legitimate people.
Legitimate people, but you know what I mean? People who actually have inside knowledge. I mean, we have outside knowledge and opinions. That's all we have. But I mean, in a way, I'm actually glad Tanaka struggled on Wednesday because it might put this whole personal catcher shit to bed.
On the media side, because that's where I think it is. I don't think it's a team thing.
But that's where I feel like, I mean, that's where we live. We live on that side. Fans live
We do live on that side, but we better really, really hope that if we are to look at the team that we're rooting for, if they are directly affected by the media, especially the New York media, if Girardi doesn't have thick skin at this point and doesn't give a shit what the media says and actually, you know, is affected decision-wise by what the media is saying, then we got bigger problems because then he's listening to people who have no idea what they're talking about baseball when he's the guy, he's the professional, he's the one who knows his guys the best, and he's listening to outside chatter. I just don't think that's a realistic scenario.
You know how the New York media can be. I mean, look what they did with the opt-out clause in Tanaka. There was a million stories going around about that. Tanaka kept getting asked about it, and he had to comment on it. Cashman had to comment on it. So if this personal catcher thing went on for a couple more starts, like you said, then maybe it would become a thing, and that's another thing he has to comment on. And another thing he has to worry about, other than throwing cement mixing meatballs to the Baltimore Orioles, which is the actual issue going on with Tanaka right now.
Yes, that is the actual issue. Tanaka is not throwing the ball right. That's the problem. That's the problem.
And it has jack shit to do with who's catching him.
100%.
I understand that you can prefer a catcher over someone. But to sit here and say, some people say, well, Romine has, he has an ERA whatever it was, 3-point-something with Romine and 7-point-something with Gary Sanchez. See, it's the catcher. It's bullshit. It's so stupid.
Yeah, it's just looking at a statistic and then making an argument based off numbers that don't make. This is why I don't like advanced metrics, because 95% of the time they're all horseshit. This is why Billy Bean will never get into the Hall of Fame, because he's a horseshit GM.
There,
Yeah, he's a horseshit GM. Let's just base it off the numbers instead of actually looking at what's happening on the field when we're seeing the guy throwing meatballs and just obviously not executing his pitches to whoever the hell is catching. I could be catching the damn ball. He's not throwing the ball where I ask him to throw it. It's ridiculous.
Another thing that should be talked about with Tanaka is that this was a normal day's rest for him in this start, and he sucked. Last time out, because of the rainout, he had an extra day's rest.
Now, that is an actual statistic where you can look at where there's a good amount of outings that do show something. They show a trend.
Especially from Japan.
When he is off longer, he does better. That's just what... That is a thing.
And it's funny because I'm sure every pitcher in baseball is like that. I mean, to a certain extent, if you have 9 days off, you're going to be rusty. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say everyone's better with 5 days rest instead of 4 days rest. But Tanaka is like night and day.
Yeah, it's unfortunate to that's the case. But you know what? At this point, honestly, I don't care what they got to do. If that's what they have to do and they have to skip a start and they have to figure it out, then figure it out and let them do it. I don't really care.
It was a big start.
I just want him to pitch well.
It was a big start for Tanaka and the Yankees, who have not won a series in Baltimore since 2013.
That's a problem. That's a problem.
They've sucked. I mean, they've sucked. I have some stats here. They've sucked on the road in the AL East altogether. 8-23, now going to be 8-24 on the road since start of 2014 in Baltimore. I mean, that right there, Baltimore's been a really good team over the last few years. That right there buries the Yankees. In Tampa, they're 2 games under .500 against Tampa Bay, and Tampa has stunk the last couple of years. They finish in the basement pretty much every season, and the Yankees are still 2 games under .500. And then since... in Toronto, the Yankees are 2-8 since the start of last year, and they go to Toronto for 4 games this weekend. The only team they've handled is the Red Sox. They're 7 games over .500 against the Red Sox. But all those other teams, Baltimore, Toronto, Tampa, they've stunk against. And the Yankees have not finished that far out of the division the last couple years, as bad as the teams have been. But right there, we know why they haven't won the division. It's because they've stunk in their own division.
Well, I think it's a little deceiving too, because when you look at where the division winner was, or where, you know, where, when they were still in the hunt, they were still hovering around 500 at that time. So they weren't, it's not like they were great teams. If anybody had a really good team in those divisions, they would have run away with it and the Yankees wouldn't have been in the conversation. But, you know, hovering around 500, they were still in there. Granted, I mean, it's the numbers are telling, but here's the deal. The bottom line is it's a completely different team right now. So we should throw these numbers out the window and move forward to see what this team can do on the road. This is a new team. They should not even be looking at these numbers. If I'm on this team, I'm looking around and I'm not seeing very many guys from, you know, the previous couple of years, 3 years. And this is my own history we're making right now, and that's how they should look at it. Absolutely, but we still struggle at Tampa. Tampa's a freaking hole, and we struggle, and we're struggling again at Camden Yards.
And Camden Yards used to be Yankee Stadium South. The Yankees used to crush at Camden Yards.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is a different team. I think you're absolutely right. But the Yankees have lost both series if they lose tonight on Wednesday. They've lost both series this season in Baltimore. And this series kind of went down for pitching. I know their offense has been sort of collectively struggling. They broke out on Tuesday night. But Montgomery got off to a bad start on Memorial Day. He had 100 pitches through 4 1/3 innings. It was a Nathan Eovaldi special. He was 2-2, 3-2 on everybody. He looked tentative. He looked like he was afraid of the Orioles hitters.
Let's get something straight. Eovaldi would get through 5, okay? You need to give him some more credit, please, because right now you would be ecstatic with some Eovaldi starts. In the game, winning almost 20 games a year, throwing...
Almost 20 games a year? He won 14 games once. What are you talking about, almost 20 games a year?
Oh, he was phenomenal.
You can't even round up and get to 20.
He had some really good streaks, that Eovaldi. He was such a good pitcher. Unbelievable how good he was.
But Monty looked shitty. Monty looked bad on Monday.
Yeah, the problem with him is he's definitely running these counts way too much. And that's been kind of the tune all season. When he is not at his best, he's getting too deep in counts. The pitch count's getting too high, and he's getting in trouble. I mean, even for the good starts, if you're looking at if you circle the good starts on him, he still gets into trouble late in the games, a late home run or whatever that kind of almost ruin the start for when you look at the final stat line. So it's an issue for him. He's got to cut down the walks. He's got to be around the strike zone more often. I don't know if that's pitching to contact. I don't know if he's trying to be too perfect. I don't know what it is, but this is a guy that definitely needs to lower that count so he can get deeper into games.
He has had really good pitching performance. I was about to say he's had good pitching performances against weak hitting teams, but then I remember he had a great outing against the Chicago Cubs in Wrigley. Yeah. So, right. I mean, Baltimore's a tough lineup for him to face. They've got a lot of right-handed hitters between Machado, who I know is struggling, Trumbo. I mean, Davis is lefty, but he can hit the ball a mile. Mancini, Hardy. I mean, that's a stacked lineup. So that's a tough matchup for Montgomery.
Yeah, definitely. It's a tough matchup for any of the Yankee starters. I mean, the Baltimore Orioles can
not
mash.
Severino.
Yeah, I mean, Severino pitched terrific. We'll get into that for sure. But I mean, it's a serious lineup. It's a major league lineup that will score runs all year long. These guys will not have a team slump for very often because there are so many good hitters within that. And like you said, Machado, while he's been productive, he's been, you know, coming up big, I think, in big moments because he still has production numbers, but his batting average is way down. I mean, the guy's definitely not hitting where he normally is. So I expect that to be, you know, to find the horizon at some point.
Yeah. Didn't he have a golden sombrero on Tuesday? 4 strikeouts?
Yeah, he may. Was it 4?
Or was it?
It was either Monday or Tuesday.
He's looked lost in this series, and he's usually a Yankees killer. So the Yankees this situation could have been a lot worse. And Monday, the Yankees lost 3-2, even though Montgomery only gave them 4 1/3 innings. And one thing I've sort of noticed is that the Yankees ran into a lot of outs. Castro didn't score on a ground ball from Didi that went off the second baseman's glove, even though Espada was waving him home. So Castro kind of was asleep, didn't really see Espada waving him in. Another situation, Gardner tried to tag up on a fly ball to left field off the bat of Gary Sanchez. I don't know what the hell he was doing. I think I saw something tweeted that apparently Mancini's arm is weak, so the scouting report said run on him any chance you get. But I don't really like running on a fly ball to left field when you're already in scoring position.
Well, right, and there was, from what I remember, there was one out on second. So he was in scoring position I think what he was trying to do is obviously put himself in position for a fly ball to score a run. I thought maybe they thought that runs were at a premium at that point and they wanted to get a run and they could try to steal one at that point. So I don't know. Look, I mean, if you're going to, I'm not going to kill that because they were running on, you know, the guy had to make a perfect throw. And if they're running on the scouting report, usually Gardy, he's got the speed to do something like that. So there was something there, obviously.
But and, you've got Holiday.
Mancini made the perfect throw.
You've got Holiday, Castro, Judge coming up at with a couple cracks to get a base hit. And maybe if, you know, 8 and 9 were coming up, you push the envelope. But not when you've got 3, 4, 5 coming up. It's stupid.
Yeah,
it's stupid base running.
I get it. I don't hate it, though. I mean, I kind of do like the aggressiveness occasionally. That's an easy fly ball from one of those guys, too, to steal a run. I see what they're doing. I get it. I like the aggressiveness, to tell you the truth, with Gardner. You're not going to do that with many people. You would do that with Gardner and maybe Ellsbury, but that's it. Not even Ellsbury anymore, I don't think. I feel like he's slow now.
He's concussed.
He is concussed. He's confused and slow.
Yeah, but it's just one of those things that in a 3-2 game, outs on the base path are more glaring. And Dylan Bundy looked great. I still think Dylan Bundy is a lumberjack. I think it's just because of his name. But he's been really good this year. He's been Baltimore's best pitcher. And I look at him pitch and I'm like, none of his pitches look to me unhittable. So I don't really know how he's doing it. It's just kind of like a bunch of decent stuff.
Yeah, and he's a guy that we've been hearing about forever, and he just hasn't been able to stay healthy, and they're finally getting some production out of the guy as far as being healthy, and now he's living up to it. Because he's been a top prospect for a long time. I feel like I've been hearing about Dylan Bundy for years and years and years. I don't even know how long he's been in the system, but it seems like it's been a long time.
Yeah, he had the surgery. I think it was Tommy John surgery, so he's been delayed. But, you know, he's putting it together for Baltimore now. He's definitely their best pitcher. Tuesday, the Yankees bats came alive. The Bald Bros, Gardner and Holiday, 2 homers each. I want to talk about Brett Gardner, who is playing, without a doubt, the best baseball of his career. 11 home runs since April 29th. That's over 1,000 OPS in that time span. This can't last. I mean, Gardner is not... these are Aaron Judge numbers he's putting up. That's not what Gardner is. So... How long are we going to ride this wave with Gardner? Because we've seen him go into slumps before.
Yeah, I mean, the slump's going to happen at some point. But I saw a quote from, it's not an exact quote, but I remember reading it at some point today, about Judge talking about Gardner getting sick of him being a slap hitter. So he starts to hit the ball out of the ball.
Challenged him.
Yeah, I think it's funny because there's obviously, you know, they were going back and forth, Gardner and Holiday within the game itself, and they were, you know, trying to match each other. And even in the post-game interviews, if you're listening to what they were saying, that's exactly what was happening. Holiday comes back, he's like, I got you. And Gardner's like, all right. So they were literally trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark to match each other. I like that. I think it's it's good
fun.
Competition within, no doubt. Have fun. Just like you'll hear Chance Adams saying, if you're not having fun, it's not fun. So
you can't have fun without fun.
Yeah, his own yogiism. It was perfect. But yeah, you know, Gardner is elevating his game, and you know whether that's the people around him helping that, or he's just locked in. He's completely healthy because he hasn't been in a while. You know, we've seen lingering injuries from him. Maybe he's completely healthy and just taking a better approach. You know, he's studying the advanced metrics and looking at the launch angle. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, but it's working. I hope he does it.
A direct quote from you earlier in this podcast, 95% of advanced metrics are horse shit.
Yeah, and it is. I just was mostly joking because there's no freaking way that Gardner looks at an advanced metric. Not a chance in hell.
Also in that quote from Aaron Judge, you called Gardner a ball of muscle.
Yeah, see, that's great. This is why I love this team. The vets, the young guys, they obviously have a good rapport. They poke at each other. They challenge each other. It's perfect. This is a beautiful chemistry they got going on.
Gardner is having his OPS, obviously, I said over 1,000 in the last month plus, but for the season, it's still almost 150 points above what his career is. So he's going to come back down to earth. Let's just hope that by the time he does, Greg Bird is back. Aaron Judge is still hitting. Gary Sanchez is in the lineup, first of all, and also hitting. I mean, he has not hit this year.
He's been super quiet.
Games where you've been like, okay, the Kraken is about to be released. He's hitting the ball hard, but he never has seemed to turn the corner. But let's talk about Bird. He is making a rehab appearance in Tampa on Thursday in single A ball. Carter finally got the pine. How long have people been calling for that? Two for his last 28. Your boy, Ref Snyder!
Ref Snyder! Thank God! Finally, we get an opportunity! And he'll probably go back to the bench at some point and then get sent back down to Scranton.
No hits for your boy, Ref.
Yeah, he had some great at-bats, some professional at-bats, I gotta tell you.
He walked. That's more than Carter could do.
No doubt. He was on base. We had an opportunity. That's when you looked at this at-bat, there was hope. You knew you weren't going to – there was no strikeout. Can we implement – if we're talking about – we've been having these conversations about pace of play and the, you know, if we're going to intentionally walk a guy, we just – can when Chris Carter comes out, can we just do like the intentional strikeout so that we can just pass that at-bat and move forward? Because that's what's happening every time.
I was home over the weekend and I'm watching the game with my dad, and we were watching one of the Chris Carter at bats, and he was just complaining about how he starts every at bat in the hole 0-2, and the face never changes.
No, it doesn't.
It's just the same stupid looking smirk.
It's Todd Bowles' face. It's awful. Yes. It's the worst thing ever. And yeah, it's making me feel like I'm watching the Jets. It makes me angry.
Thank God he's a 1 year throwaway signing. It's just it's obvious he made no sense for this team. If it weren't for Greg Bird's injury, we would never see him.
But that's the reason they signed him. That was the whole point of why they signed a guy like this, because I think they didn't have confidence in Bird coming back from that injury. They didn't know. Granted, it's a different injury, but there was a
different injury.
I understand that, but it was a failsafe. It was a failsafe.
Greg Bird, I anointed him the MVP at the end of March.
Yes, you did. I don't know if you'd want to admit that.
Greg Bird was. We all thought Greg Bird was going to be their best player, and we were not going to even see Chris Carter. It actually, people were praising Cashman because Tyler Austin broke his foot shortly after the Carter signing. But I mean, come on. Ref Snyder could have done what Carter has done over the last 2 months. No problem.
Oh, I totally agree with you.
Anybody could.
Here's the deal with Carter, though. We didn't think he was this bad.
I did.
You didn't.
Yes,
there's
I
no
did.
Way we thought he was this bad.
Yes.
This bad is ridiculous. I don't think you saw the actual at-bats before. And because we never had this conversation until we actually saw, like, what in the hell? The approach, the swing, the look on his face. What's happening here? How is this guy in the major leagues?
We saw numbers.
I know. You saw the strikeout numbers and you saw that. We knew he was going to strike out a bunch, but we thought he was going to roll into some home runs. He's playing full time. Like, your whole argument was that he's not going to play full time, so he's not going to run into that many home runs.
That's true.
Well, he is, but he is playing full time and he's not running into the home runs.
Yep.
He's worse than we thought.
He
is.
I'm not saying this with any sarcasm. I don't understand how he's a Major League Baseball player.
I totally agree with you. I don't get it. It's ridiculous. He's terrible.
He has one aspect to his game, and it's not even that good. So glad we don't have to see much more of him.
Well, hopefully. Don't say that, because you're going to jinx it, and we're going to have Stephen Drew all year long like we did. Or we're going to have Chris Carter like we did Stephen Drew all freaking year. It's just not going to go away. Something's going to happen. So knock on wood right now, or I'm blaming you. It's a carryover of your MVP jinx.
Now we're at a point where, I mean, we weren't missing the first base production when 1 through 8 in the lineup was going bonkers. But now that a few of the other guys are slumping, I mean, it's clear. I mean, you can't have a black hole at first base. You just can't.
No. And look, we knew this team was not going to do what they did early in the season. I mean, the entire team was blazing hot. Chase Headley was leading the league for like a month something.
Maybe like 6 games.
In a lot. No, it was more than 6 games. It got to a point where you had nothing to say because it was way longer than anybody expected.
I knew it was coming back down to earth, though.
Right. I mean, granted, that's baseball, Susan, but the fact of the matter is he's really came back. But a lot of the team has come back down to earth, you know, maybe definitely not to that extent, but obviously we knew we weren't going to be, this team wasn't going to be as smoking hot as it was, but yeah, the production at first base, it's a power position. You need that production. So we really do need Greg Bird to come back and be healthy and get that confidence up. You know, I don't need that Greg Bird little side-eyed Derek Jeter walk Greg Bird. I don't need that guy. I need the confident Greg Bird.
So far this season, Aaron Judge and Starlin Castro have been what we thought Gary Sanchez and Greg Bird would be at the plate.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. That's a pretty good comparison. I think that we didn't have any expectation for Judge, honestly.
But we thought Gary Sanchez was going to be a beast, and we thought Bird was going to be a beast. So if we can get 80% of what we expected from Sanchez and Bird at the beginning of the year, now we're talking about something where the Yankees don't have to have everybody clicking in the lineup. They can rely on those core guys.
Well, and that's what's going to happen. That is what's going to happen. We're going to get, first of all, Sanchez is, you're right. He hasn't looked like the same guy, obviously. I mean, the same guy, I think we told everybody, if you listen to us in the winter, you should have lower expectations at this point. Because I think we shoved it down your throat for weeks and weeks and weeks that you need to lower your expectations for a guy that got off some ridiculous blazing streak that will never happen again and had never happened up until that point. So it was just unrealistic to expect the production that Sanchez was giving after he had come up. But these guys have come down to earth. Sanchez is going to be a productive hitter still. I still think he's a very good hitter. And I think Greg Bird's a good hitter. While I still am into the tune, I don't think he's going to hit for average. I still think he's a 250, 260 guy and will hit 25, maybe 30 home runs.
At the very least, Gary Sanchez is a presence in the lineup, something that Austin Romine is not.
That's true. Although Austin Romine was one of those guys who was carrying the team, was part of the carrying of the team because he was doing extremely well offensively.
He was doing better than we thought. Yeah.
I mean, he was doing way better than we thought.
So we got a mailbag question about him being the best backup catcher in baseball. So
that is true.
I liked what I saw out of Severino in that game as well. He was overshadowed by the offense, but he escaped a couple of bases-loaded jams. But he got screwed on some infield hits and some weak singles. So he looked good.
It's funny how you can rely on those getting screwed by weak singles and squeaking through the infield.
He had three infield singles let up in one inning. Come on.
Yeah. No, it's just funny because that was I think I said that every single start for Nathan Eovaldi, and all you did was shit
He's
on
not
it.
Even
but
on
now
his team
now
I cannot
now that it's convenient now that it's convenient.
I cannot listen to you praise Nathan Eovaldi anymore when he's on the freaking Tampa Bay Rays recovering from surgery.
No, but Severino was good. He still had that dominant stuff, and all his pitches were working really well. He got into a jam. What was that? The second inning?
Escaped in the second inning, yep.
Yeah, it was a bases loaded jam, and he got out of it. And with, I think, one run came across during that inning.
No, he didn't give up a run, I thought, until later in the game.
Maybe I'm misremembering. But he got out of that jam. I remember him getting out of a big jam, and he was dominant after that. I thought he was very good. And it's really good to see him put back-to-back starts together. And if you're looking at the last, four, he's been good.
Yep.
With one exception.
We kind of touched a couple weeks ago that maybe, Severino might be regressing a little bit, but he seems to have halted that.
Yeah, because the regression, I think talking about regression, you have to go pretty far for us to really say he's regressing compared to what he's done. Last year was the regress. This year is all about moving forward.
Well,
he's done a great job.
We were seeing little things that instead of improving from start to start, were maybe weakening start to start. But it was a minor hiccup. Severino has been fine. He's been great. I also want to talk about Chance Adams. I know we talked to Chance Adams, but let's talk about him and when we might see him in the major leagues. He's had an unbelievable minor leagues this season. And his start today, 6 innings, 12 strikeouts on Wednesday against Columbus. An opposing scout said he looks like a major league pitcher, power breaking stuff, and a plus fastball. He's got 4 pitches. We kind of talk about that with him, his 4 pitch mix. This is exciting because he's rocketed through the system.
Yeah, and it's been it's not very often when you have a guy like this that I didn't realize when we were talking to him that he played junior college. Then he went to Dallas Baptist in his junior year and then got drafted after his junior year. So I was that was new to me. I didn't realize that he had played before Dallas Baptist as well. This is not a guy that was, blazing scout coming out of high school or college. This is a guy who was a reliever, a starter. And you could just tell when you're talking to him. First of all, he's a relaxed dude. Not much bothers him, I guarantee it. There's not much that bothers him. He goes out with an agenda, and he basically just sticks to his game plan. And he's confident. He's extremely confident in his pitches. He's got a confident demeanor on the mound from everything you see. And when you hear him talk to him, you can tell that he's got confidence in his abilities. And it's obviously translating on the pitcher's mound because, what is he, 20-2 in the minor leagues? That's stupid. With a 2.0 ERA. And he just keeps progressing. And every single time he moves up, he does well. So promising stuff.
Does not strike me as somebody who needs a personal catcher.
No, and we talk about that. I'm glad you asked that question.
We had a pitcher. We had a major league. We had a professional pitcher on the mound on the podcast. I had to ask him about that. That's the hot topic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think his answer is very telling.
His stats in minor leagues career: 23-3, 1.96 ERA. That's not bad.
Yeah, that's stupid. That's a guy who was a reliever before he even got to the Yankee system. That's crazy.
Going around baseball at this point, the brawl between Harper and Strickland. Drawing a blank on his name. Harper and Strickland. What did you think of that?
I thought the pictures and the videos afterwards were better than the actual brawl, just because of all the amount of things that happened within that little brawl, like Samardzija coming out of nowhere and just taking out his own people, the amount of hair in that brawl.
The person Samardzija ran into is concussed.
I don't doubt it. He came in like a freight train. And this is a dude that played football at Notre Dame. Not a small guy. Like, he was coming in to block. A block of safety. That's what was happening. He was blowing up. It's like he was blowing up the V on a punt return, a kick return. The guy was so I disagree with a lot of people's take. I don't think Bryce Harper threw the helmet like people were comparing it to
50 Cent,
which is ridiculous. 50 Cent just can't throw anything. Like, first of all, Harper, I don't think was going to hit him with it. When you go back to it, it looks like it slipped out of his hand. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think he was going to hit him with the. I don't think he was going to hit him with the helmet.
I think he was 100% trying to hit him.
No, I think he was going to throw it past him. He was going to throw it by him.
Throwing the helmet's a bitch move there by Harper.
It is a bitch move, and that's why I hope that he wasn't.
You want to go out there? You want to go out there and throw punches or tackle him? Fine.
No equipment.
Do not involve equipment because
right.
Say he hit Strickland in the face with that helmet. Busted nose, possible concussion. Like, that's ridiculous.
No, smashing his face. That's a hard plastic object from almost point blank. And I guarantee Bryce Harper could throw the ball pretty hard.
And do you remember that minor league brawl? It was a Red Sox prospect named Izzy Alcantara. And he went out there swinging the bat at the pitcher after he kicked the catcher in the chest.
Didn't Delman Young do the same thing?
Probably.
Or his brother? Yeah, it was one of the Young brothers, Dimitri or Delman Young. One of the two of them went after somebody with a bat. Yeah, it's you can't do that. I mean, that's just that's assault, brother, right there. That's not good. You're going to get some charges drawn up on you if you start going after people with a weapon like a bat or, you know, especially this day and age, you're definitely going to get arrested.
So where the hell was Posey? What the hell was he doing? I understand Strickland is kind of being a jackass for throwing at Harper for something from 2014. I mean, that's petty. That's ridiculous. Right. But teammates are teammates.
I guess not at that point.
I'd be really pissed if I was a teammate of Buster Posey in that situation.
Oh, no doubt.
I understand that there's, you know, some things you can't condone, but when there's a brawl happening in front of you, you side with your teammates. You don't sit there and twiddle your thumbs. And we talked about this with the whole Jeter A-Rod thing, remember?
Yeah, but don't you remember the fact that Major League Baseball changed rules because of Buster Posey
That's
not
true.
Getting
he's
injured?
The golden boy.
He's the golden boy. No, he's not going to go out there and hurt himself because we can't even run over the catchers anymore because of Buster Little Posey.
He might crack a nail.
Yeah, I mean he's obviously a well-known little dainty boy who doesn't like to get hit. So that's what he is. He's got a label now. He's definitely got a label.
Yeah, bad luck. He was always one of my favorite players. I thought he was a leader. I mean, he is a leader of that team. You're a leader of that team. You can't be doing that.
Maybe he is the leader of the team, and they were calling for a code red, and that was part of it.
I mean, Strickland is a bullpen guy. They could easily get rid of him, I think, over Posey, no problem. But yeah, I wonder if there'll be any issues there. Coming up, the Yankees are going to Toronto, and the Blue Jays, after a really rough start, are actually hot right now. They're almost back at .500. Boston is also really hot right now. And I thought this was interesting. The Yankees started 21-9 and they're 9-10, about to be 9-11 if they lose on Wednesday night since then.
Yeah. And that's I think that's just telling on how the offense is rolling. The offense was so ridiculously hot early in the season that it was carrying the entire team and really just masking a lot of the deficiencies that this team had. And now we're seeing, you know, more of these glaring problems that are happening with the team, and the offense isn't carrying the rest of it. So you're seeing it more, you're paying attention to them more. They're more obvious. And that was with Toronto. I mean, you look at the injuries, the amount of injuries that they sustained ridiculous. Early in the season. Crazy. I mean, practically their entire starting rotation was out. Jay Happ is back now. I think he just started. But Sanchez, Liriano, Donaldson, Tulowitzki, Russell Martin, Steve Pierce. I mean, these are guys. Steve Pierce was supposed to come over and at least platoon at first base, if not take over that first base role for Encarnacion. And, I mean, add Encarnacion to that of guys that they're missing from the previous year. That's a ridiculous amount of people. So, you know, they're now back reloaded and just in time to take on the New York Yankees.
It's a big series, 4-game series. The Blue Jays are riding hot. I mean, they're not out of this, obviously. They're going to use this as a benchmarking series. And we said it at the beginning of the podcast, how much the Yankees have struggled on the road in their own division. This is a legit series coming up.
I totally agree. And I think that you're definitely going to see some very inspired baseball from the Toronto Blue Jays, especially because they've gotten a lot of their guys back just recently. So they're going to want to get off to a good start. And then seeing the Yankees, who've been the talk of Major League Baseball basically for the entire year, Aaron Judge, the talk of the town, the talk of the country, really, when you're talking about baseball. I mean, the dude's everywhere now. There's a mark on their back now. The Yankees, again, have a target on them. It's been a while, but it's there now.
It's beginning with the Monday game against Baltimore. They were starting 13 straight games against the AL East. They kind of didn't play the AL East much in May. So gonna get interesting for the AL East race. And it's right now the Yankees and Red Sox at top, which I think how you and I both want to see it for the rest of the season, because that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun, no doubt about it, especially with the young core of both teams, hopefully in some big heated series down in the middle of the summer when it's hot and everybody's sick of it and they're all just hating each other. That would be that'd be some good times to get some tensions brewing. We need that rivalry to get back, because it's dead right now.
All right, guys, let's get into this interview. But again, one last reminder, call the voicemail line 646-480-0342. And as we said, rate and review the podcast. Enjoy this interview, Chance. Now joining us on the podcast is Chance Adams, pitcher for Scranton Wilkes-Barre. Chance, first question I got to ask you. I was looking through your Instagram today. I saw you were wearing a Yankees hat back in 2012. So what's the story there? Were you a Yankees fan growing up?
I was a Diamondbacks fan, but I liked the Yankees. It was my first travel ball team, so it's probably why I was wearing it. I don't know if it has an M in it or not. My travel ball team was the McDowell Mountain Yankees.
Okay.
If it doesn't, then I probably just had the hat. I like watching them. They were the best growing up, so.
Yeah, I saw you grew up in Arizona, so that 2001 World Series, it's got to be tough being a Diamondbacks but also a Yankees supporter back then.
Yeah, and I actually was able to go to game two and watch Randy pitch, which was awesome. And yeah, it was definitely a cool experience.
Watching the Diamondbacks, was Randy Johnson one of your guys just growing up? I mean, did you watch? We've talked to a bunch of the guys when we asked them about watching baseball as kids or growing up. A lot of them were like, "Nah, I didn't really watch it. I just played it mostly." Are you one of those guys who was playing it and you got just sick of it and didn't want to watch it, or were you just immersed and would watch it as well?
No, I didn't watch the lick. I just, my dad and my mom would take me to a game or here and there. And then that's probably the only baseball I watched as a kid was that World Series. I mean, and then if I was eating and there was a game on at a restaurant I was at, but other than that, no, I didn't really watch it. I didn't really have any idols growing up or anything like that. I mean, I liked Willie Mays when I was younger when I played in the field just because of the athleticism and stuff. But, like, I was a pitcher when I was younger, so I didn't really, like, have any favorite pitchers or anything.
Yeah, you're probably running around your backyard trying to make those fake over the shoulder catches like Willie Mays. Yeah, I think we all did that. So, all right, if you didn't watch any baseball, did you watch football? What other sports were you watching?
I didn't really watch. I was outdoor. I was an outdoor kid a lot of, whether I was at my mom's house or my dad's. I was just outside, just doing something, throwing the ball against the wall, or I don't know, just shooting stuff. I don't know. I just like to be outside, riding my longboard. I did a lot of stuff when I was younger. Just jumped around, different hobbies.
Nice. That was pretty much what I did when I was a kid. If I was at my mom's house, I would do one thing. If I was at my dad's, I would go and we'd be in the woods, whether it was in the winter, we'd make it a loose track, doing something outdoors constantly. So I feel you on that. I was an outdoor kid myself. Right on, man. So you grew up in Arizona. We're just trying to get to know you a little bit so the audience can know who Chance Adams is. I think everybody is expecting all the baseball questions. They want to know exactly, you know, what's happening, because I think a lot of people are gearing up for you to come into the Bronx at some point this season. But growing up, and you went to college in Dallas as well, right? That was a pretty drastic difference going to college.
Last year.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my last year. I went to JUCO at Yavapai Community College.
Okay.
For 2 years, and then I went to Dallas Baptist for my junior year. That's where I got drafted from. So, but yeah, no, it was definitely different going from Arizona to Dallas. But the change was great. I mean, it was an amazing school. I'll always be grateful for that school.
When you were in college, you were a relief pitcher. And then I saw the Yankees converted you to a starting pitcher in your first full season. So what was that transition like? Talk about the adjustments you had to go through that season. And were you surprised when they told you that?
No, but what happened was that Yavapai came in. I was like a relief/closer in my first year. And then my second year, I actually started. It was like every Friday game. And it was like our 7-inning one. So I would always throw that. And then after that, I went to Dallas Baptist, and that's where I was a reliever. And then I got drafted as a reliever, and they basically told me that they're going to use me as a starter, get me geared up for a starter. So that's why if you go back and look at my first little half season, whatever you call that, I pitched every fifth day, so like a starting rotation, but it was only 3 innings max just because they were trying to get me acclimated. So I kind of knew already right when I got drafted.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I don't think many guys get transitioned that early as far, you know, recognizing where they want you long-term within the organization. So that's a pretty early set. They obviously saw that you had, you know, the abilities to be an effective starter. So what does that do for your confidence when you're making that transition?
They just saw that I had 4 pitches, and they're like, you know, well, just try him. And worst thing that happens is he sucks at it, and we just throw him to relievers. So,
I feel like that's a fallback for a lot of failed starters. And, I mean, obviously some guys have tremendous success
doing that. So, yeah.
Mariano Rivera was okay.
The guy has good, you know, 4 pitches, and, I mean, why not try him? If he gets hurt or can't handle it, I mean, he only lose maybe like a year or two, and then you just throw him in the bullpen and he goes back to dominating. So
speaking of your 4-pitch mix, you had an awesome start today against Columbus, 6 innings, 12 strikeouts. At what point in the game, or does it come in warmups where you know you've got it and you're going to mow people down?
It's usually after the first inning. I mean, you'll know I usually go out with a certain confidence every time and try and do my best. And, you know, the strikeouts sometimes come and they don't. It's better when they do, though. It's nicer. But today's stuff felt good. The pen, my stuff was good. It was all right. And then I got in that first inning and I just kind of felt real locked in. And I just was clicking with Wilkin. And I don't know. I just felt good today, I guess.
You said you were clicking.
It was hot, so I was like, "Finally, freaking hot!" And
summer's coming.
So I love pitching when it's hot. I mean, I like sweating because I just feel my arm heating up, and it's just nicer. I mean, I'm not a cold weather guy. I mean, I can do it if I'm just relaxing though, like with a fire around. But I mean, if it's baseball, no, I want it to be hot or, you know, beautiful, one of the two, but not cold.
I gotta ask you. You mentioned you were. Fun. Sorry, you mentioned you were clicking with Wilkin Castillo, the catcher for you guys. How much does the catcher play into your approach on the mound, your game plan, day in and day out, going about things?
I mean, I've been good with most of my catchers. I mean, I threw to Eddie, and I've thrown to Kyle a lot. I'm real comfortable with Kyle. And Eddie too. I've thrown to him quite a few times now. I mean, we do great together too. I usually click with my catchers. I just kind of tell them beforehand what I like to do with two strikes and whatnot, depending on the batter, and they know them better than I do usually. So it's definitely an important role. I mean, if I'm out there just in a good rhythm and all of a sudden I just start shaking, step off, doing that every two pitches, I mean, we're not in a good rhythm. So whenever me and the catcher are in a good rhythm, it's always going to be a good day.
If you read the scouting reports,
more often than not,
that's cool. If you're reading the scouting reports, I think the biggest one of the glaring pros of your game is your slider. Everybody says that your slider is professional ready. It's ready to go. Are you most confident in that slider, or throwing the scouting reports out the window? What do you feel the most confident in on a daily basis, or does it change throughout your outings?
It depends on the hitter.
Yeah.
Depends on righty or lefty. But I'm fine with any of my pitches, honestly. Change up, I have a little bit of resilience to throw, but or resistance to throw on it. But I'm getting there with that. That's the one pitch I really am just trying to focus on, and so I've thrown it so much in my last few starts, but except today I only threw it like four times. But yeah, no, I feel confident in most of them.
Is the changeup a newer pitch?
No, I just usually don't really throw it. I just didn't usually throw it. I would just fastball slider and mix in a curve here and there, and kind of just worked for me. And but in the big league level, and even at this level, AAA, you get to those hitters where you really need a changeup, whether it's a quick out, whether it's looks just like fastball, and then you just get that little ground out you need. So, I mean, just depends.
You moved up from AA Trenton to AAA this season. Maybe aside from, like, better quality buses or better quality food, what's the biggest difference between those two leagues?
Are you talking playing-wise? Are you talking, like, amenity?
Whatever you want. What's the first thing you noticed when you first made it to AAA?
The first thing I noticed was the buses, because that was, like, one of the first things I got in. I was like, oh, these are nicer. And then other than that, I mean, there's a different energy, in my opinion, when you're up here, when you come from AA to trips. Maybe it's just because, they're one step away rather than like, oh, I have another level to go. I don't know. Just a different energy up here. Guys are kind of more locked in and kind of, I don't know. They just got to, I shouldn't say more locked in. They just, I don't know. It's just a different energy. You just got to be in that energy. I don't know how to explain it.
What's the atmosphere like in the when you're in AAA and in Trenton as well? What's the atmosphere like in there? Obviously, there have been championships won at both levels. So there's a lot of really highly touted prospects that are expecting to make a difference in the majors at some point soon. What's the atmosphere like with all these guys there?
It's great. I mean, we all have a lot of fun, but we also work really hard, and it's just hard work and having fun too. I mean, the game's not fun without fun, so we just kind of joke around at times, but then when game time hits, we're serious and do our job and also have a little bit of fun while you play, or there's no point to do it. So just kind of like that, I'd say it's a good mix of both.
Yeah, like you said, you got to have fun. Did you do anything to have fun after today's game, after you had that nice outing?
Nah, I mean, it's just, we went and saw a movie because we just had we actually got off at a decent hour today, so had time to do something for once. So we just kind of went out and saw a movie, and then we went out to eat, and then I just got back home, about to just hang out with the guys after this, or my roommates, just the guys that I live with.
What'd you see?
We saw Baywatch.
Yeah, I've heard it's not very good. What do you think?
I really liked it. I thought, I mean, of course, you're going to have all like your critics who want it. Like, I mean, what do they expect? It's supposed to be kind of like a funny, you know, comedy type movie. And that's exactly what it was. I mean, what are you looking like for Lord of the Rings out of it? Like, you're not going to get that. So, I mean,
no, I mean, I'm going
to like for a movie like similar to like Neighbors or something. I mean, it's kind of like that. I mean, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, Neighbors
I'm not
with the
a movie critic. Yeah, Neighbors with the Rock. Yeah. No, it's definitely a good movie. We're going to see Pirates of the Caribbean, but the majority vote ruled for Baywatch, so we went and saw Baywatch.
I like that you guys go with the majority vote and then everyone sticks together.
Yeah.
So do you pay attention to what's going on in the major leagues? Are you guys, you know, constantly watching the games and seeing what these guys are doing? Yeah.
Yeah, we watch the games. Yeah, I usually watch Jordan's start just because, you know, I know him pretty well, so I just make sure he's doing good, and he's been doing good, so it's just fun to watch him pitch, you know.
Licking your chops to get up there sooner rather than later?
Yeah, whenever. I mean, they'll call me up when they feel time's ready. I'm just, you know, just going to go out and do my job. Nothing I can do about it, so.
That's probably a good approach.
For the guys that do.
Yeah,
it's whatever.
It's probably a good approach. Well, Chance, we'll let you get back to enjoying your evening, your night off, and thanks a lot for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you, guys. You guys have a nice night.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.